Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to A Time for Justice. This show, A Time for Justice, is on the Elevated Places Network, and tonight we present to you another impactful show. We pray to God, to Allah, that we will be able to give some knowledge as well as put a perspective and even really a focus on some very serious problems in our community, and we can talk about how we can make them better if we unite and pool our resources, our mental resources. And so on A Time for Justice, this show discusses legal and current events in a roundtable discussion of legal minds. We discuss this country's centuries-long failure to apply, uphold, and enforce the laws, and the overall failure of the legal system to give justice and the negative impacts these failures have had on Black people and their Black families. Ultimately, we want fair dealing. We want justice under the law, but all too often, this is not the actions that we see. So our guest tonight will not make those excuses for racist conduct, which really distracts us from the truth, which is the path to justice and equal protection. Let's talk about just, fair, and equitable solutions, what's in the best interest of the people. Let's remove the distractions. And so tonight, our title is Housing and the Courts. The impact that COVID and the economy is having on evictions and homelessness and other economic-related ills, and we want to talk about how our ability to be secure in our neighborhoods is really being impacted. So let's talk about what we can do. Like I say, I think this is a very serious topic, because oftentimes we know the poor have no voice, and I think it's very important that we as community, as believers in God, as, you know, come together and address the ills of some people who may not be able to speak for themselves. So I want to go ahead and open up this conversation tonight. We have Judge Nichelle. We have our sister, Nichelle Muhammad, who is an attorney, and she's actually a judge in the Mount Vernon City Court. She's been with us several times. She is really one of our favorite panels. I mean, all of our legal commentators are favorites, but, you know, I really appreciate her desire to sacrifice her time and to take that time to come and speak with us. She, again, is a judge out of the Mount Vernon City Court. Prior to that, she's been an attorney who practiced law from 1995. Sister Nichelle is a wife, she's a mother, and she's just an overall wonderful sister. So I'm going to just go ahead and open up her mic tonight and give Sister Nichelle the greetings.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, Sister Nichelle. Yes,
well,
ma'am, beloved.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes, ma'am. I appreciate you coming on. And we're going to go ahead and open up our mics for our brother, Brother Maurice Muhammad, who is a magistrate out of Bessemer, Alabama. That's right outside of Birmingham. And Brother Maurice, he has been another contributor to our program many times. And Brother Maurice is coming out of Alabama. He has been this municipal court magistrate since 1996 when he was appointed, then until 2012. And then I believe he has got the reappointment. He was, in 2012, Brother Maurice was appointed as the chief magistrate for the city of Bessemer. And he's, you know, contributing writer on expungement law and just all brings us always a myriad of experience and discussions. And so let me open up his mic as we attempt to have a discussion on this very important issue. Brother Maurice, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. How are you, dear sister?
I am fine.
And thank you for having me. And Sister Nichelle, assalamu alaikum, dear sister. How are you, ma'am?
Wa alaikum salam, brother. Doing good, brother. Happy to be presenting
Beautiful.
With you tonight.
Yes, all praises are due to Allah. So, again, I am your host. I'm Sister Pamela Muhammad, and I'm an attorney. And actually, I'm an attorney in Houston, Texas, as well as Missouri, in the state of Missouri. So we're going to, like I said, we're going to tackle this topic. And really what we want to make clear is that we're only going to cover what we see. You know, we're not attempting to really give legal advice. We're actually really wanting to give some perspective on these viewpoints as to what we're seeing in terms of this rising eviction and, you know, the economy. And we want to see what's going on in the courts and in our jurisdiction. And we also have two guests. I know Sister Nichelle Muhammad. She was so gracious to bring on people who also can add to this conversation by way of experience, by way of knowledge, by way of just being beautiful people. So the first person I want to open up her mic, her name is Reverend, I believe, Angela Ryan, and she's the founder and pastor and CEO of Greater World Ministries. And she's going to discuss some things with us. She has a powerful testimony that she's going to share with us on this topic. So I want to make sure, Sister Angela, I'm going to open up this mic, and I'm not sure, but Sister Angela, is that your mic open? Okay. Let me go to the next
one.
Okay, is this Sister Angela with the last two digits or 08 in the phone number?
That's correct. Assalamu alaikum, praise the Lord. Can you hear me?
I can, Sister Angela. Thank you for coming to our show. I can hear you fine. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And I believe we also have a Reverend Dana Rose, who is the Vice President of Family Restoration Project, and she has worked in the area of prison reentry. And Reverend Rose, I believe your mic is open. Ma'am.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. It went out for a second.
Okay.
Yes,
I bring you greetings. Assalamu alaikum, as well as give God the glory, honor, and praise. Thank you for having me on this broadcast.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming. And so, you know, we want to talk about this issue regarding homelessness, regarding the impact of COVID, regarding evictions, regarding prison reentry, because as we know, there has been a significant rise in evictions. There's rise in rent. You know, there's lack of jobs as COVID has impacted our Black community. And we want to discuss this, and I want to open it up by putting it in perspective. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan in the July 19, 2022 article, what we're talking about is how the enemy tried to and was successful in destroying us. This is a quote from the minister. destroying in us that quality of love that makes us desire to serve one another. He said we are in the condition we're in because we have been living under an enemy whose purpose was to render us an unthinking, uncaring people that would be perpetual slaves or servants to him and his people and his cause to build his world, while we never do that for ourselves. And that's very important because the last part of our topic is that we want to increase our ability to be secure in our neighborhood. And I think tonight we're going to do that by sharing stories. We're going to get some knowledge. And so let's go ahead and talk about this topic. So when it comes to eviction, Sister Michelle, I'm going to let you open this up because I know as a city court judge, you know, deal with this. And in a court, there's actually a report that came out entitled America's Rental Housing 2022. It's from a study out of Harvard University. And they're, you know, quoting things like, you know, there's been a rise in low-income households are suffering the brunt of job losses. We're starting to see a rise in evictions. We're starting to see a rise in rent. There's a shortage of housing. Apartment rates are rising. You know, renters are what they call cost burden. And by that, they're saying that people don't have a lot of money left over after they even pay their rent, if they can pay it. You know, the New York Times is even reporting about this $1.5 million shortage in housing and affordable housing, you know. And so talk to us about what you're seeing in your courts regarding evictions, and is there some cause for us to be concerned in this?
Yes, ma'am. All right. Well, thank you. Yes, so of course, even prior to COVID, there was always an issue with adequate housing prices and state of housing in our communities. You know, Allah said, and as the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has taught, Allah doesn't mind us making money off of a venture, but as long as you do it appropriately. So if you own houses and apartments that you're renting to people, they should be decent homes and decent houses where people can live in cleanliness and you know, respect the things that they have. So even prior to COVID, we had a lot of issues with housing, the market of our housing and the status of what kind of housing we lived in, the kind of conditions that the landlords would keep the buildings in. And so, you know, even before COVID, there were issues with the amount of money that was charged and not having the benefit of good employment to pay for decent places to live. And since COVID, of course, it has only exacerbated the issue because a lot of our people that had the jobs that are considered to be blue collar, a lot of those jobs either closed down or they were laid off. Mm. And so that only further exacerbated already the existence of not being able to pay for decent housing. And then, you know, having to be shut down now of not having any work at all. And so COVID definitely had a tremendous impact on the community. And what we're seeing now is that people are in a state of coming into court as a result of, you know, proceedings to put them out of their homes for lack of payment. And also there's those that just want their apartments back, which are called a holdover. So you have a non-payment petition and you have a holdover. A lot of our people have the non-payments because they weren't able to pay. And I mean, the communities have not paid for at least 3 years. Even before COVID, there might have been some monies owed in 2019. Then they owed for all of 2020, and 2021 continued to be an issue. And here we are in 2022, and people still have not been able to pay. And although the government set aside monies for it, what we're finding is that the money that the government is trying to help out with doesn't cover the amount of money that's due and owing. And so people are being left with amounts that they still owe even after the government jumped in to try to give some relief. And in addition to that, they're continuing not being able to pay.
So, and the government allows them to be put out for the continuous non-payment. So COVID, they give you a break. They can't put you out for the COVID time period, which is March 2020 up until January of 2022. But if you continue not to pay in 2022, you can be put out of your houses. And so what we find is that people either cannot pay or do not want to pay. That is a flip side to this. You have some people that can pay, but they're not paying because they're utilizing the system to just continue not to pay. And then you have a bulk of people who also cannot afford to pay. And so now they're being put out of their homes anyway, even though the government tried to come in and help. But it wasn't enough. It's not enough money. So the landlords are not being made whole, so they're going forward with their evictions. And so, you know, it's a terrible state to be in. And the only issue is that our people, you know, well, that's what I'm going to say about what's happening.
Yeah. And the thing is, as you're saying, I mean, when we look at the historical data, we know that due to slavery, due to just the whole system of white supremacy that, you know, has some writers call it the unconstitutionalism of urban poverty. You know, we're talking about incarceration for wrongful convictions and petty crimes. You know, we're talking about black people not sharing equitably in the wealth. So when you look at the stats, you're looking at one stat based upon this study, the Joint Center for Housing Study at Harvard. You know, they say black people, we're nearly 40% of the unhoused people, but we're 13% of the population. You know, they're making predictions of jumps in homelessness. You know, rents, as we know, have climbed by about 14.1%. So like you said, we could barely afford a lot of these properties even before, and now here we are. One of the things I found troubling, I thought it was very interesting that according to a study, Rental Housing Finance Survey, properties are now being owned by business entities. The share of rental properties owned by non-individual investors rose from 8.88% to 26%, so from 8% in 2001 to 26% in 2018. They're talking about arrearages in rent. So, you know, we really have, and let me just throw this out here for the low-income housing. You know, we're talking about 23% of households with incomes below 25%. I mean, $25,000 are behind on rent. 15% of households with incomes between $25,000 to $50,000 were behind on payment in 2021, versus when you look at those who make over $75,000, you know, it was only about 5%. So it's a real issue. It's like it's our problem because of this systemic slavery, because of the urban poverty that we live in that is unconstitutional. And we're going to talk about a lot of the reasons why, such as prison, incarceration, how it goes over to the homeless community. But, you know, as we're noting, it is our problem. So let me go ahead and open up the mic. I know Brother Maurice, you know, because we do the legal parts, is there you want to add in on some of what you're seeing regarding evictions? Or I know we can go into the homelessness, and then I want to hear from the sisters who have some real
most definitely.
Commentary.
This sister,
yes, sir.
I'm going to be very brief because I really want to hear from those sisters. But really, Sister Nichelle really hit everything on the head in terms of where we are and where we're going in terms of homelessness and in terms of evictions. So she has done a wonderful job, and I really want to hear from my sisters.
Okay, yeah. So I know we have, again, Sister, I believe, Reverend Angela.
No, I'm Dr. Ryan, and I would think that I would defer first to the guest. I thought that Reverend Dana Rose would speak more to the issue of prison reentry, and I would really ask that she would go. I asked her to come on first. I don't mind speaking after her. She has a wealth of knowledge with prison reentry, and I would go after her.
Yes, ma'am. And I do apologize, Dr. Ryan.
It's no problem. When you hear what I have to say, you'll understand it better by and by. It's okay. It's all right. It's not, no need to apologize.
Ma'am. I have to get my paper with your name on it, so I do apologize.
It's okay. I bear witness. I'm right here with you. Come on. Reverend Rose is a wonderful woman. I asked her to please be here for substantive conversation with you, and I just really wanted her to speak. I'll come right behind her, though.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Okay, beautiful. So, Reverend Rose, I know you want to talk about reentry because this is an area that I know you're familiar with, so go right ahead because prison reentry, I'll just put it out there about how that increases the risk of poverty, of course. We know the diminished earnings. We know the barriers, you know, that there are barriers when people are being released from prison, newly released from prison, and it adds into this conversation about evictions and homelessness and us being able to secure our neighborhood. So, yes, ma'am, go right ahead, please.
Yes, I think that is key to talk about many of the barriers that a lot of our young men and women face when they are returning back to our communities. Some of the barriers are not just drug and alcohol addiction, but also, as you mentioned, homelessness, long-term welfare dependency. I don't believe the welfare system was designed to keep our people in bondage, but I do believe that that was just a conduit to help for a temporary. And our system is designed where it's such a dependency where you see generation after generation of individuals relying on the welfare system. Sometimes there's a lack of marketable skills. That's another barrier that a lot of the young people we service face. Poor job search, lack of basic computer skills. And our agency is called Family Restoration Project. So we not only deal with the individual returning to the communities, but we also deal with the family unit. There's a reunification that must take place. But our organization and many others out there, there's one mission, to reduce recidivism and improve public safety. And we also want to improve public health in our communities by unconditionally welcoming those young men and women and even serving them. I find in my experience, in my short years of experience, of not only serving them once they come out, but being afforded the ability to go into Sing Sing, to go into Rikers Island, to work with these individuals 3 months prior to the release, that has proven to be very, very, very effective. And then when we think about the other areas, the family dynamics, the social and lifestyle risk variables, there are many, many, many things that these young men and women are dealing with. We have great success stories. Some of the young men, they have the 20 years. Some may have done as little as a year. But once they make that rational decision, that decision to say, I'm going to change my life for the better. I'm going to become productive in society. And I believe reentry starts the first day they go inside of an institution. And then it works the way they are released. So I'm very passionate about that subject. And again, housing is one of the key components that sometimes the enemy, if you will, he uses that to cause them to recidivate because they come out, they have no skills, no job. So I am affiliated with several resources. We're wraparound collaborative. So if our agency does not have that information to provide to the young man or woman, we have a wraparound collaborative initiative that other agencies are there to provide services. We know that education, vocational training, all of these are things that these young men in the city of Mount Vernon in particular, it's a great, great concern how they are going back to not only gangbanging, but drug addictions, selling drugs on the corner. I myself, not to get into a testimony, lost a son right here in the streets of Mount Vernon. But I'm passionate about working with young men so that they can choose another path, if you will. And housing has been a great, great, it has been a great concern of many of the agencies, housing, and I would say jobs. So, yeah, there's prison reentry has really, really, really expanded over the years. There are a lot of pop-up agencies catering to this population. But I do believe that although a lot of them are falling deeper and deeper into a state of no return, we now find ourselves targeting the younger population, which we provide a credible messenger initiative. Those are the young men, 13, 14, finding themselves in the streets with guns, no education, but guns in their hands, and resorting to gang violence. So the credible messenger initiative, we work with them at a very, very young age to try to change the narrative that, you know, and many of them are dealing with trauma. So I thank you that you guys are having this conversation. I think it's much, much needed, not just only in Mount Vernon, but even our other surrounding, you know, cities.
Yes, ma'am. Oh, that's so beautiful. Thank you for all your work and your dedication. That is just beautiful.
Yes,
I mean, you know, because as you're saying, one of the reasons why we're having this conversation is that we can talk about violence. You know we can talk about gangs. But we also have to look at the underlying causes of some of this violence. And one of the things I think we miss is that if you don't have housing security, you know, if you don't have the ability to maybe have the job skills, or you know, this is going to be an underlying cause. So let's get to that. So I think that this is so beautiful. Just wanted to throw out a stat. They said the Brennan Center talks about how those who have spent time in prison, and these are things, it's kind of like, oh, we should know this, but those who spend time in prison, they earn potentially around one half of what their non-previously incarcerated peers, you know, are earning.
Yes.
And so, you know, this is a real barrier, like you said. And then they talk about how under the community supervision, people who were on parole and probation, you know, allegedly, according to this stat, that between 30 and 50% of those people lost their jobs since the pandemic onset. So, you know, this is a very real issue. Thank you so much for that.
Yes. If you don't mind, I just want to add, there are a lot of agencies and companies within our community that they kind of put up a stigma when it comes to giving a young man or woman that has been incarcerated for anywhere from 10 to 15 years about getting them a job. But we find in our research that we are letting the businesses know that they can earn a WOTC federal tax credit, and that's work opportunity credit. And that federal tax credit available to any employer that will hire an individual from targeted groups who have consistently faced significant barriers to employment. And that's key for those that are willing to take that chance. They have an incentive to just receive that money to take it. And 9 times out of 10, I'm sure the judges can attest to this, if that individual is on parole or probation, 9 times out of 10, they're going to be successful working at the job because they don't want to go back to that.
Right. Yeah. So true.
Yeah.
Okay. That's Brother Maurice, were you going to say something, add something to
yes,
that?
Yes, ma'am.
We have a little interference
is...
in the background. I don't know, somebody's mic, just a little interference. Go ahead, Brother Maurice.
Okay.
Yes,
I think that may be me. I'm having some a roof put on in my house right now, and they are still working. It's 2,000 o'clock, but they're still working. But as my sister said, she brought my thought to a point that having your organizations work to combat this issue. When I was doing my undergraduate in Nashville, we worked with a black priest. He was a priest in the Catholic Church, And we saw that we had a homelessness issue right around where their where the diocese was and in the area. So he was like, man, how can we combat this? And one of the first things that happens when a young man is when he is homeless and he is looking for employment, one of the first things they ask you is, do you have an address? You know, do you have somewhere, you know, we can send your documents and so on and so forth.
Right.
And unfortunately, most of them had to answer no. And so with that, they are somewhat disqualified from, you know, pursuing the job opportunity. So what we looked at, well, why don't we do something to combat that? And priest and father and I, we got together and kind of with some other brothers and put our minds together. And what we did is we came up with a mailing square. And it was pretty much just, if you've been to a college campus, the P.O. box situation. And we used the street address of the diocese. And then as an address for the individual, we made it a suite number. So his little box was suite number 12 or suite number 13 or suite number 100. So now when he goes in to fill out an application, he has, you know, 2530 Deluxe Avenue, suite 28, you know, Nashville, Tennessee, blase, 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 as an address, so that he can begin to work and begin to get that situation. So what I'm saying this to say, a lot of times our agencies, the agencies that we have, we can work together in the community to create opportunities to combat these situations. Because a lot of times when the young men and women are homeless, no one wants to give them a shot. Because being homeless, first of all, it has a stigma of instability. You know, you're not here, there, or anywhere. You're just kind of wherever you can be. You know, but when we began to attack that, when we began to look at that, then what happened, yes, they were still homeless in theory, but then they began to get jobs. And when they began to get jobs, then we began to work with people in our area that had apartments, that had double-tenant homes, that had, as we call them in the South, shotgun houses, somewhere where we can begin to put people and help them with their vacancy rates and say, hey, give them a deal. Now, we don't have full price, so, you know, work us a deal that we can get people into your place. And so I think one of the things we will have as a community and as a leadership structure, we have to begin to work in our community to, as you say, solve our problems. Because whenever we're presented with an issue, usually the result or the answer to the problem is right in the question. So, you know, I'm just floored with the progress that the sister's making and their organization, because it is so important that someone advocates for these people. It is so important that they have advocates and that they have people that are plugging for them. And as my sister said, when they're coming out of prison, one of the key things that you have to have when you're coming out of prison is a home plan. And if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. So if you don't have a home plan that is consistent and that is viable, sometimes they won't even let you out. Because now you cannot contribute to you can't contribute to the community. You're actually coming into community being a nuisance because you're not contributing to the process. So, you know, hats off to the organizations that are working to help our people and advocate for them.
Yes, sir. Beautiful. And real fast, I want to throw this out here because I really want to kind of get to this feeling of despair. Because I think the beauty of this show is that we have people from all over. Our brother Maurice Muhammad is in Alabama. And one of our solutions is look at the South. You know, let's look at coming out of some of these urban areas where the southern cities may offer a little bit of a more hopeful environment. environment. Because going back to what the sisters were talking about, coming out of a place like New York, you know, I saw some stats out of Los Angeles, California, you know, where we're talking about Skid Row, where you have over 60,000 people, black men living in squalor in these areas. They talk about the incarceration where you have 1 in 4 people who are incarcerated just because they're unhoused. I mean, we know D.C. and other areas where it's a real horrific and hard, non-friendly situation that our people are facing. Brother Maurice will bring him back on to talk to us about the new face of homelessness. That was something that he and I were talking about earlier, where you might have children, young people in their 20s who don't have a place to go. You know, we talking about how in Missouri you got a governor and other states, they're criminalizing homelessness. You know, so this is a very serious situation, you know, that we're all putting our heads in to talk about. So I thank you, Brother Maurice. And but, you know, as I say, this situation creates a lot of anxiety and lack of security when you're talking about evictions, when you're talking about homelessness, when you're talking about being released out of prison and not having the sufficient, you know, support systems in place. So I don't know, sis, did anybody want to, you know, come in and help us to get a little bit more perspective on what we're looking at?
Yes, I will speak now if it's okay, Attorney Pam, if that's okay.
Yes, ma'am. This is Dr. Ryan.
Yes,
Reverend
yes,
Dr.
ma'am.
Ryan. Oh, yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I will comment. First of all, I want to thank all of the comments that went before me. Everything has been very substantive. Can you hear me? I don't know. But everything has been very substantive. I have received a wealth of information based on statistics and studies. And I think that personally, I've really been blessed by, again, just the wealth of knowledge. Particularly, I come from a position of thinking that all of this has to begin with understanding and having a relationship with God. I'm a survivor of 35 years of drug and alcohol addiction, and some of what was spoken about tonight, and let me just preface my conversation by saying that Judge Johnson is my sister-in-law. And so she kind of can confirm and know that what I'm sharing with you is truth. So I'm a survivor of 35 years of drug and alcohol addiction, alcohol, heroin, crack, methadone, cigarettes, and pretty much just have lived in the past a dysfunctional life. And if it had not been for the grace of God, I probably wouldn't be where I'm at today. But through the mercy of God, God allowed me to go back to school. And in my journey, I was able to go get my bachelor's, a major in psychology, and get my master's in divinity, get a full staff at diversity loan and get scholarship and get my master's of divinity and get my doctorate degree in my academic journey. But more importantly, I gave my life to Christ. And I believe that the emptiness of not having a relationship with God was the core of my problems. And in my dissertation, what I did was I spoke on what is the role of the church in the lives of people with past and present addictions, because I believe wholeheartedly that the church has a role to help people in this current day, to help people with those struggles, people with past and present addictions. And so through my dissertation, what I did was I developed a 12-session course that helped people understand that there's a place where the mind and the spirit meet. And as a matter of fact, I went to all the churches, not all, but primarily a lot of churches in Mount Vernon, and I did this program called Progression in Session, where it collaborated education and spirituality, and I partnered with colleges. And so what I did was I took my history and I correlated it with my destiny, and I gave back. I gave back to the community of all that had happened in my life, but I used it in a way that I would give back. And many people was able to go back to college through the program. I found it to be very necessary. And subsequently, in my years of studies, I was able to become a professor in the seminary that I graduated from. Now, after founding that program and pastoring a couple of churches in the AME Zion Church, I now have founded the Greater Word Ministries. And it's only because of the fact that I have a relationship with God. I was far away from God, and I have dedicated my life for the rest of my life to walk with the Lord and to help as many people. It's been 23 years now that I've not put a needle in my arm, that I've not had any alcohol, that I've not smoked any crack. And I believe I invited my methadone counselor, former counselor, to be on the line. But what I'm saying is that all of what was happening in my life was because I did not have a relationship with God. My parents told me when I was living with them to pay rent in my house. I was paying rent when my parents lived and I lived with them. So I was taught to pay rent. This is teaching that the parents teach in the home. Now, not everyone is taught that. However, when I was out there using, I wasn't doing that. I wasn't because I didn't really do anything but use drugs. But since I've been back on the right track, I take care of the responsibilities of my own and the churches. Do you understand?
And I'm just saying
that that's where it starts, by having a relationship. And it wasn't until I got to the church and began to hear the word of God being preached that my life changed. And I'm determined to preach and teach, to evangelize, and to win souls for the Lord for the rest of my life. And it doesn't matter if it's a large congregation. This now is a virtual ministry. And so it's progressive. It's new. It's not, you know, throughout the Bible, it talks about how the Apostle Paul went out and how the Lord Jesus was out. It doesn't necessarily have to be a building. But the ministry is to the least of these, the homeless, the drug addict, those that are different. And so I am honored to have been here. I knew someone else might be able to speak to some other issues, but I just want to say thank you. So it was the Lord that brought me to become a doctor in ministry, a doctor of anything. And I boast in the Lord. I'm nothing. Hear me now. I'm nothing without the Lord. I could still be out there doing what I used to do. And I'm not ashamed of those things because guess what? I still have struggles. All of us do. If I pass the mic around, all of us do. So
that's right.
I am grateful that you asked me to be on. And my sister-in-law knows I love the Lord. That's it. And I love God's people. So I think that if we could just, you know, that's why we're in this pandemic, because we have failed to give God the glory. All of us, it's not just one state. This is all over. And until we all submit to do the work of God and the will of God, we will not get out of this situation. We will get out of this situation.
Beautiful.
Hear the word of the Lord today. Yeah. Hear the word of the Lord today.
Yes, ma'am.
So I commend you, Attorney
Thank you. All praises to
And you continue to do this work that you do. I love the fact that the statistics and the studies, but you have just heard from a spiritual wonder, and it's only because the Lord touched me. Thank you so
great.
Much.
Thank you. Yes, thank you.
Praise
sister.
God.
Praise be to Allah. So I want to say this, and Sister Nichelle, you go right ahead. Let me say that the mic, we can, if you have a question or a comment, press the number one. You can get into the host queue. For our listeners, if you have a question or a comment, please press the number one, and we will open up the mic. Yes, ma'am, Sister Judge Nichelle.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Sister Pamela. I wanted to focus in on something that Reverend Dr. Ryan just said about she was taught to pay rent, and she was taught to be respectful of the fact that you have an obligation and you honor it. And I only bring that up. We're talking about homelessness, and I realize that there is a you know, definitely our people suffer from not having the means to pay for apartments and rent and other things. But there's also an element in our people
culture
as well to arguably be a little abusive of commitments that we make and not honoring them, a skill set or something, a character that has been taught to us, quite frankly. You know, we talk about freedom, justice, and equality, right, in the Nation of Islam, but we also talk about respecting other people, making commitments and honoring them, because we should be upstanding and up and righteous people. And so when Dr. Reverend talked about the fact that she was taught to pay rent, it's a bigger issue. It's taught to have an obligation, and you honor it, and you show respect, and you show honesty and integrity in your dealings. And so what's happening also in the landlord-tenant realm is that people who actually may have the ability to pay have decided not to pay in some of the instances. And so what happens is you have landlords who are not big corporations. See, people think that landlords are these people that have lots of money. They're these big corporation banks that have property and own major properties. But what I see in my court more than that are just regular people like ourselves who may have had a little money and they bought maybe a little house to try to get some extra income so that they could provide for their family vis-a-vis this property. And they put people in it, and the people abuse the landlord's property and they don't pay when they do have the ability to pay. And so there's a flip side. And so what happens is you have people, I have elderly people in my court at times who own houses who say, Judge, I can't even afford because they're not paying me. I can't pay my mortgage. And guess what? I'm on a fixed income. I can't even buy my own groceries. So the reality that we see is that it's not just, you know, the tenants who are suffering, but the common landlord is also suffering. Brothers and sisters and other people of different persuasions who just have the ability to have a property that they're trying to get a little extra income to get ahead of the curve are now suffering. And they're going into foreclosure because people are not paying. And in some instances, not all, the people have the ability to pay, but they don't. And so every now and again, we have to check that we are not succumbing to being taught terrible lessons from a people who basically were the authors of lies and deceit and murder and everything else, that we don't fall into that trap to become those people as well. And so I'm mindful that sometimes landlords are suffering in this process as well, and it may be a good person trying to provide housing, and then people stop paying. They don't honor their obligation. And so you see a lot of crisis in that regard as well. So I'm seeing landlords that are literally wringing their hands at court appearances like, Judge, I can't do it. I am losing everything. And I see the person going out every day and they're working but they're not paying me.
Mm.
And so we see a lot of that as well. And so on the backs of this homelessness, yes, we got a problem. Yes, you know, it's happened. But as Dr. Reverend Angie mentioned, you know what I mean? A relationship with God and honoring your commitment and not being slick and making sure that you're treating everyone the way you want to be treated is something that we have to exercise even in our landlord-tenant relationships. So I just wanted to add that there, because if I didn't, then I'm not showing it the fairness and the equality and the justice when we know that there are two sides to the coin. And
very
we have
good.
To defend even those who are on the other side of it, who are victims as well, because some people, not all, play a game with the system, with the tricks and the tricknology and stuff like that, as opposed to honoring the commitment that they've made to people who are suffering right alongside with them. Thank you for allowing me to share, sister.
Excellent.
Praise be to Allah. Sister Pamela? Pamela might have got disconnected. Brother Maurice, are you still on, beloved brother? Magistrate?
What happened, Michelle?
I'm not sure.
Oh,
Dr. Reverend, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
And okay, I can how about Pastor Dana Rose?
Yes, I can
yes,
hear
I'm
you.
Yes, I'm sorry. I can hear
you. Oh, there
you.
She is.
We can hear you. And actually, it's me. It's me that was on mute. Sister Debbie, I opened up your mic. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Salaam alaikum.
Wa alaikum salaam, Sister Debbie. That was me with the mute. Okay, go right ahead.
Yes, ma'am. Just wanted to say all the comments are really beautiful. Put into perspective, because I'm a union rep at my job, and we just finally ended our bargaining for the next 3 years contract for our employees. And in defense of people that actually go to work and are struggling, you'll find that some of these major corporations, like the ones that I work for, since the pandemic, felt like they didn't need to give us any extra income, and we were really fighting for the people that had mostly the lowest hourly wage, and there was no way that they could live off of $9 an hour. I mean, you can't even pay rent with that kind of money. So we were battling the corporate personnel that was representing the company, because they didn't even think that those people really needed much of a raise, because they thought they were doing us a favor by paying them that little amount. But we finally were able to get everyone a raise today. And not only that, but they're giving us a retro pay of 2% in raise for each income level and job classification, and then next year they're going to get a 3% raise, and then the following year a 3% raise. But in defense of the people that go to work, sometimes, you know, when you don't make enough money to pay your bills, and it doesn't matter if it's the rent, if it's gas, if it's your if you have to ride the bus, if you have to buy food, when you have to decide which one of those you have to pay, it becomes a very, very hard. And some of these people don't have no education. Some of them here don't speak English. We That's even right. found out today some people don't even have identification, because they don't want to take off from work to get a, you know, get a copy
mercy.
Of their birth certificate and get a proper ID, just the ID, not a driver's license, just the state ID with their name and their picture on it. So we
yeah.
have lots of issues with people that are working, and they're struggling trying to make ends meet. So everybody is not being dishonest. It's just people are really struggling. A lot of people lost their jobs during COVID and didn't have a job to go back to. So we still have a lot of people that are not able to
that are not employable because of different reasons. So, but all I can tell you is if you, you know, if there's anyone out there listening that's a landlord, you know, talk to your people that are renting from you. If you see that they're not paying their rent on time and if they're struggling, have a conversation with your renter. And because if they're too ashamed to come to you, then, you know, maybe you have to make that first step and say, look, I see that you're having a problem. Let's see if we can work something out. Maybe we can get somebody that, you know, you can refer somebody to a job source or, you know, like at the church, you know, or someone
yes,
that
ma'am.
Can help
mm-hmm.
them, you know, get some type of employment so that they can pay their landlord so they won't have any riffraff, so they won't be evicted. Because where I live at right now, so many people have gotten evicted from my apartment complex. It's not even 50% occupied because they have evicted so many
wow.
people out of this property. And that's mm-hmm. very scary. So
yes,
I just wanted to throw that out there because, you know, everybody that's living in these apartments, you know, I'm just looking at some of these transportation. Some of these people are driving some nice cars, but just because you're driving a nice car don't mean you got good money.
No, you're right.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, no. Yes, ma'am.
Uh-oh.
No.
Uh-oh. That is so very important point. So thank you so much for that, Sister Debbie. Because,
yes,
as, you know, these reports are saying these job losses are real. And I think one of the biggest dynamic that everybody can attest to is that rents are increasing. They're going through the roof.
Absolutely.
One report said anywhere from $200 to $300 increases to, you know, thousands. There's a housing supposedly shortage, and you have these companies that are buying up this property and now becoming the landlords to people. And so this, you know, they're predicting homelessness to increase. And again, this is
Jesus.
The Elevated Places Network presents a time for justice. So, of course, we know that our solution is looking at building our own communities, rebuilding wasted cities, looking at, you know, overpopulating certain areas, putting ourselves into a better condition where we're not going to have to be victimized by this unraveling. And also looking at how we can maybe prepare with resources or knowledge so when our people are suffering from this lack of affordable housing, you know, will this be a trigger for increased violence or crime? And that's what I think we have to look at, especially when you're looking at 50% of families, homeless families with children, you know, 50% of people, I guess, these families, black communities have high, entire families are homeless. Let's just put it that way. So this is a real, and, you know, and it kind of came up because as we go through these urban areas, we're starting to see more and more people laying on the streets. You know, we're starting to see, I had an experience similar to what Sister Debbie is saying, where I was coming from downtown Houston on a Friday, which means that it should be bumper to bumper, but it wasn't anybody, it was no traffic. So it was very surreal to me because there's something going on with the income dynamics, the working demographics are changing, and it looks like, according to these studies, it's coming out in some very unsecure housing, evictions, potential foreclosures, and we know this is the fall of America. We really do know that. So anybody have any
absolutely.
Questions or comments, please put, you know, press the number one to get into the host queue. I see Brother Maurice is back. Let me go ahead and open up Brother Maurice's mic. Can you all hear me? I'm making sure I'm not on mute. Brother Maurice,
I can hear you. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. You know, could
you
talk
me,
to us about, we can hear you, yes, sir. Can you talk to us about, because the sister gave such a wonderful presentation on her work with reentry. And one of the issues you and I spoke about earlier today was how when people are charged with certain crimes, it bars them from being able to live, to be able to live in certain places, get certain jobs. Sure. And it's really kind of like a black code. You know, this is that 13th Amendment black code scheme. Explain that to the audience. I thought that was very fascinating.
Yes, ma'am. There was a concept, as you mentioned, black code. And they renamed it to Crimes Against Moral Turpitude. And these are basically vice crimes, as we call them. People are getting drunk, and they may public lewdness, where you may flash a body part, or you may be out in the street urinating or something to that effect. And this is an old stem. This is an old the debtor's court. And there were times back in the South where if you owed a person, let's say, $500, they could put you in jail, and then you work off that debt to the state, and the state will pay your debt. Okay. That has since been repealed and removed on the natural course, but today we see it pretty much as the criminal rehabilitation center, or the Department of Corrections, as you call it today. Because still in Alabama, you're not sentenced to time. You are sentenced to a term of hard labor. So your term of hard labor may be 25 years. Your term of hard labor may be life without parole. Your term of hard labor may be 5 years. So that has been an eyesore for a long time here in the state of Alabama, and when people are charged with certain crimes, you know, and to be truthful, murder is not on the moral turpitude list. So you have things like theft of property.
Right.
You know, you have things like theft of property. You have things like receiving stolen property, things that, you know, people say, you know, if you steal, you'll kill. But if you know, and so what is happening, it is setting up a class of people that is being stricken by the law off the rip. I mean, as soon as you get, you know, as soon as you're charged with this, and some of the moral turpitude charges, even if you're not convicted, they're holding on to it so hard, even if you're not convicted, you can't be expunged from it because it's in your past. And it's like, wow, you know, it's like, come on, you know, you couldn't convict the person, so you're going to still punish the person for this particular situation. One of the things about, you know, we were talking about the organizations, about organizations and the eviction situations. Here in Alabama, one of the things we've asked our black attorneys to do is to go in and negotiate with the property owners. And when they negotiate, let's say, I'm just going to throw out a figure, we'll say, okay, everything can be cleared, and everything can be cleared and satisfied for $5,000. So the organizations, we have organizations in our city, in our area, that have received allotments from the federal government, because this is the actual working of your PPE fund. This is how your PPE fund should be operating, to recycle and regenerate the economy, and not necessarily just to put in your pocket. And, you know, as I just talked about earlier, we began to scheme, and we began to be immoral about the situation. And so one of the things that we have to do as a people is we have to begin to break the cycle of buying what we want and begging for what we need. And, you know, you'll see that situation, you'll see that scenario in a lot of different instances where, you know, your fine is $100, but you can't pay your fine, but you got on all of the latest gear. You have on the Jordans and everything else to be a, I guess, to feel better about your social situation, but we don't take care of the first things being first. So the little fine is just $100, but we got them $400 shoes. But we say we can't pay $400. We can't pay the $100 because we can't buy $400 shoes at the same time and then pay a fine. So we have to begin to, in our community, begin to cycle that and begin to teach and train on that. And one of the things that I have seen happening in the Birmingham area, and I thought it was great that these organizations would go to, like I said, they would go to these landlords and say, hey, let us come up with a settlement amount that will do you well and do our people well. And let's settle that amount, and you pay that, and now this person is now on an even keel. Now we're at a zero balance, if you would, and then we're moving on with our renter situation. So if you get into that situation again, then that's kind of your personal responsibility, and that's something that our organizations, our churches, our sororities, our fraternities, one of the new things and the nuances of new teaching, we have to teach and begin to hold our people higher in a sense of personal responsibility, because they will, you know, they will put on, sometimes they'll put on you their burden, and their procrastination now becomes your emergency. And so we have to begin to talk to them and teach them and begin to nurture them into that process. And I know the COVID situation has had a profound effect on our people. It has psychologically has had a profound, because we've never seen this much death at one time. So our people are still a little battered with that. We've never seen people just losing loved ones just weekly. You know, it's just like, wow. You know, just people that you know. And so our people are still having to go through this psychological run, but we still have to go through the psychological run and still function. So I think our organizations are so key right now in being that conduit or being that that particular segue to this process.
Yes, beautiful. Because, you know, I want to quote the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan again in this article. And he goes on to say how we have to break up the colonial status of the black community. You can't make this community a decent place to live unless we control the education. He said the education is part of the trick. And I wanted to, because that's the part in bold. But this issue about how we're spending our money and how that is making us poor and how we are perhaps making some bad choices. But, you know we learned all of this deception from the most crooked deceivers. And so also in the article,
right,
the minister's talking about how sisters, Koreans, have about 90,000 stores throughout America selling hair products. And you'll find they're all in the black community. So, my dear sisters, the money that you give them, you'll find if there is a black bank in our community, you know, they won't put the money in our bank. So, you know, again, we are needing to be improved morally in our communities. I do agree. And, you know, but also I think the minister's explain, you know, talking to us about this colonialism and this mindset that our people have had, and they learned it from,
right,
you know, the worst deceivers. I want to read this article real quick, because it's not just evictions. We're looking now at mortgages and potentially bankruptcies that are going to come because you're going to have a lot of foreclosures.
Sure.
So that was an article I pulled off of a Mobile, Alabama, where this man, Jimmy Stokes, now he's in danger of losing his home because this 70-year-old, he says he was told that if his regular payments would be added to the end of the loan, right, some kind of modification.
Mm-hmm.
But then in January, the bank sent him a letter claiming that now he owes more than $26,000. So he thought that, like he said, early in the pandemic, they offered him some type of loan forbearance, which will
mm-hmm.
pause the payment.
But now here he is being forced to pay money. And you know, like he said, if I would have known that, I would never have done it. And so
right.
this is the type of consumer, I think it's violence against our people, and it's causing a lot of the instability, and it's going to put people at risk, you know, as this financial and economic issues are coming from COVID.
Right.
So I do have a lady on the line real fast. I wanted to bring her in because as we talk about homelessness, we have a sister, and I'm going to open up her mic, Sister Aisha. Sister Aisha?
Yes, ma'am. I'm here.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Aisha.
Wa alaikum salam, ma'am.
And Sister Aisha is the owner of a Victory Wellness and Nutritional Initiative. She's the founder, and she has been helping homeless communities and families around the Houston area now for quite some time. So she called in to talk to us about what she saw about this need and, you know, why she likes helping homeless people. She's calling in to make a comment. Go right ahead, Sister Aisha.
Good evening, everyone. Assalamu alaikum and peace.
Looks
I started off before when I was working a job, and I always wanted to do something to help somebody, and I know it pleased God, you know, to do whatever I can. So this lady and her son was renting a motel across the street from where I worked, and it was a fast food restaurant. And I asked her one evening, because she asked me, she said, could you give me some food? We can't afford to buy food because we have to pay for the hotel room. So I asked my manager, in which her and I was in good standing, and she allowed me to take my meal ticket and serve them food for that evening. And so I just kept it in my mind that's what I wanted to do, and this is before I was with the Nation of Islam. I just wanted to feed somebody. So whenever I got paid, I would give people asking the street about money. I give them money or buy them a hamburger or something. But so I got kind of excited about it. And then when I was introduced to the Nation of Islam and talked to the minister about it, he says, well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to put you over the program. I said, oh, I didn't know what to do. But I had some of the sisters that came in and helped a hand. And so we started feeding the hungry. First, we started off with sack lunches. And so I wanted to do more. So I got some of the sisters and the brothers start volunteering. If we go out, I'll drive and we get donations. And so we start going apartment complexes. We started first downtown Houston, Texas, and we started feeding the homeless men and women we have found on the street. Then I wanted to do a little more. I wanted to feed children also. So one of the sisters at the mosque, she was driving for a private school. So she said, I can talk to the manager at this apartment complex. I picked the children up there for school. So they allowed us to come on the property and feed the children. And I loved it even more. So I tell you, I've been there for 20 years, and we get ready to start up again. And go out and feed more people. There's so many people in dire need of food these days. And it seems to be getting worse. The prices are getting higher. There's hardly food on the shelves when you go in the grocery stores. And we need to definitely, we all have to get together and do something. Teach them how to grow their own food. And I think that's best because a lot of this food doesn't taste right these days. And I know that a lot of people will bear witness to that. But the thing is that we got to feed our people. We got to feed the people, period. That's everyone and anyone in need. So I say that, you know, I have been very comforted in knowing that I know that Allah is pleased with me, but I want him to be pleased with all of us so we can all get together and raise funds, do some charity work. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It's very rewarding. It makes you feeling real good inside, and you're able to help not only yourself, you can help others. So I really enjoy it.
That's right. Beautiful.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, thank you
beautiful
so
sister.
Much, beloved, beautiful. And she, this sister has worked tirelessly. I bear witness. I've seen her in action. And so thank you so very much, Sister Aisha, for coming down and, you know, coming on and making a comment. I know even the minister, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and his wife were able to see one time they visited and it was, you know, they gave Mother Khadijah was actually very, you know, happy to see the work that the sister was doing because it's so kind. You know, if we look at the minister's article and it really even with you, Dr. Ryan, what you were saying, the minister's article, it says when you live your life only for yourself, then you already dead. You're just waiting for time to return you to the earth. But when you live your life to serve others, you make life better for others to improve the condition of the world that we come into. He says that when we leave it in a better state, and those are the people whose names live. And so, I thank you, Sister Aisha, for your Victory Wellness and Nutritional Initiative, and thank you for calling. Is there a way that anybody who wants to get in contact with you or maybe donate can get in contact with you?
Well, there's a phone number, but that's a home number. Muhammad Mosque 45 in Houston, Texas.
Okay. All right. Well,
there. Allow me to be here.
Thank
you, ma'am.
There. Okay. All right then, Sister Aisha. Thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, ma'am.
Yeah. And Reverend Dana Rose, with your family restoration project, so much wisdom you gave us. Did you want to give us any more information on what you do and how we can help and what's the need?
Right. Just I really would say that I solicit the prayer from, you know, everyone. We have a great, great relationship with the local mosque. I think his name is Musa, who runs the mosque, and we even collaborated together on a Credible Messenger initiative with the youth. And right now, what's going on in the world, where there is unity, I believe God will command a blessing. So I thank God that we are all working together.
Right.
I just wanted to tap on the point that the other attorney mentioned about individuals must be educated. When you talked about the rents and the cost of rents being so high, I have a certain group of people that I'm talking to them, Judge Nichelle, about becoming homeowners. There's a first-time homeowners program that I am encouraging them because if you can get an apartment for $3,000, Section 8 pays about $1,000.
Lord have mercy.
That's mortgage. And these are some of these single women. They may have two or three children. So I'm encouraging them to enlist in these programs, and it will take about a year because they work with them, the financial budget, et cetera. So not only that our people will just rent affordable housing, but that they will go on to be homeowners. And I do believe education is everything. And then to speak to the point of the older gentleman who was in jeopardy of losing his home, I was a foreclosure consultant for many years, not an attorney licensed to practice in New York State. But again, education is everything. And I can just be transparent. I was in the process of losing one of my homes. And as a result, I realized as a middle-class Afro-American woman, The banks wanted to take this home that I know God had given me. So I always encourage individuals that are homeowners, if you're ever served with a summons and complaint, you must respond. I know the lawyers on the line.
Come on.
A lot of our middle-class families, they don't know it. They get fearful. They see a large
That's
threat
right.
from the bank demanding money. They just they panic.
Don't
they try to borrow the money, or they just give up and start making other preparations. But I worked with a few families, and not that I'm an attorney. Again, I let them know, as a pro se litigant, you have the right to put in oppositions, discoveries, interrogatories. And a lot of them
Come
I was able to help. It wasn't just for me and my situation. God showed me the map. He connected me with paralegals. And because I was able to fight HSBC for 6-7 years and still in my home,
Come
he
on.
Said, now I showed you that you can help the others. And a lot of
That's
our
right.
people, they were losing homes left and right. The banks was just doing a job on them. So I just thank God for education. As you said, you've got to be educated.
That's right.
Yeah, and you know, so it's a necessity that we work with them, not just to be able to pay rent, but go on to be homeowners in our community, because you know it's our community, and the other, you know, races is not going to do it for us.
Come on,
thank you,
man.
I just so appreciate that you had this conversation, and I mean it's just a wealth of knowledge that all of you have provided, and I'm just so grateful to be included.
Thank you, Sis. No,
thank you,
thank
you.
Yes,
so helpful. Yes, your show actually brought consciousness, insight on many issues in our lower income communities, and I thank you.
Oh, praise are due to Allah. Thank you, sister. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. So, did anyone want to comment? I'm looking at this article again, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. He talks about how the black man must do for self or suffer the consequences. This article is reprinted from a March 1, 1987 edition, volume 6 of The Final Call. And what really kind of jumped out at me as the sister was speaking, the minister is talking about in a paragraph entitled The Value of Land. And he talks about how black people in America have lost millions of acres of land through fraudulent tax schemes, ignorance, and negligence.
Yes.
And he goes on to say, take the responsibility of making sure the taxes are paid so that your land will stay in the hands of your family. You know, don't be so quick to sell the land for a few quickly declining dollars. We must hold on to our land. You know, for as the dollar loses its value, the earth becomes more valuable. He said, if that land can produce corn or wheat, it will be far more valuable to us in a few days than all the dollar bills you can manage to accumulate. And I kind of went to the end of that paragraph. But, you know, I think ultimately that's an initiative that we, Sister Dr. Ava and Sister Donna Muhammad, we have Project Separation, which it really focuses on people who have gone out into the South and different areas outside of these cities, and they're buying land and they're starting farms and they're growing their food, you know, and really coming out of some of that urban area. The minister, he begins this article by saying that the poor are forced from inner cities, and he talks about what is going on in our communities around the country. And there's a scheme by wealthy white financiers to buy up all of the old property in the ghetto. And so this was a 1987 article, but, you know, we see a lot of this playing out. And we're about solutions as well. But, you know, we just kind of wanted to talk about the subject. So we can close out, and I want everybody to go around and please make a closing comment. We can do like 60 seconds or you know, around that. Who wants to start? I thank you all so much for being a part of this panel.
Thank you, Sister Pam, for the opportunity. Yes, ma'am.
Praise be to Allah. Yes,
Sister Pam.
Go ahead.
Attorney Pam, is that?
Yes, ma'am.
Attorney Pam, I just have wanted to say thank you so much for allowing me to be on your program. I, too, just wanted to say I'm on Facebook, Greater Word Ministries on Facebook, and everyone's prayers would be so much appreciated as I continue to do the work of the Lord.
And, of course, I echo the sentiments of Reverend Dana, who talked about education, because the synchronization of education and spirituality, while education is important, without spirituality, listen, you know, the Bible says without knowledge our people perish. Without understanding and education, our people will perish. But you need spirituality to hold you, because if you don't know God, where are you going? What are you going to do? So those two there keep me going. You know, you have to stay in your word, and you have to help others, because people are really – it's despair and it's hopelessness. And so if you could just pray for me, you know, look me up on Facebook, and I don't know if many of you do that, but that's where I'm at. That's the ministry that the Lord has assigned to me. And so, again, thank you. Everything, again, for me was great, and I pray that Reverend Dana knocked it out the park for you.
Oh,
and Michelle, you know,
thank
I love you.
You as well, Dr.
Yes, yes. Yes, Michelle did a great job, and continue the great work that you do. As you know, my brother is Brother Arthur Muhammad, and so he is doing a fine work there at the mosque.
Yeah.
And I'm just grateful for all what you do. That's my biological brother.
That's
and
beautiful.
So may God
yes,
bless
ma'am,
you.
Sis. Thank you, sister. Okay. You are such a beautiful person as well, Dr. Ryan. So we appreciate your words, and we pray, and, you know, for your continued success as well. Yes, ma'am. Yes, so Sister Michelle, did you want to – we got 60 seconds. Did you have any closing remarks that you
seconds.
Wanted to say as well? Six. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Praise God. So 60 seconds. I just want to say, you know, I am so happy to be a member of the Nation of Islam in this dispensation of time, because – the Honorable Minister Farrakhan, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, have been trying to teach our people from the time they were here, from 1930 on up, when Master Fahd Muhammad came to Detroit, Michigan, to educate and to let our people know who they are and whose they are and how important they are in this struggle, and how they have to overcome different things to get for self, do for self, educate, come out of this world's thinking, get into the right thinking, freedom, justice, and equality, treat people the way you want to be treated. All of those lessons are learned and provide a foundation for us, even in this dispensation of time. And so I want to say that I'm a judge. I sit with those foundations as the principle of how I move forward being a judge, understanding the unique position that I'm in. And I wanted all the brothers and sisters to know that I do God's work in my ministry of justice by being fair, judicial, uncompromising, allowing people to see both sides of the coin, where you may not be 100%, see where the error of your ways, giving them beneficence and mercy. And so I thank Allah for these teachings, and for all of you that sit around the table with us and doing it in your individual way. And may God be pleased with us as we move forward together as a family.
Yes, ma'am. All right, beautiful Sister Michelle.
Excellent.
Judge Michelle Muhammad, I appreciate you. Brother Maurice, who is the magistrate judge in Bessemer, Alabama, thank you. And I want to
thank
all of you for listening to the Elevated Places Network presents a time for justice. To hear previous shows, you can log on to our website at Blog Talk Radio, Ask Dr. Ava. And I also want to remind you to listen to Sister Ava's show on Thursday. That's at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. That's Ask Dr. Ava. I want to thank Sister Samaya Muhammad, who is my producer, Sister Donna Muhammad, and Brother Terrence Muhammad, Sister Rhoda Muhammad, who are the Elevated Places team. I want to thank you all for listening and ask that you tune in next week for more informative discussions. Thank you, and assalamu alaikum.
Thank you, Dr. Rose.
Thank
you. Dr. Reverend
Ryan.
Thank you. We love
thank
you.
Thank you.
All the sisters and brothers.
Bless
you. Brother Judge, Magistrate Maurice.
Yes.
Happy to be here with all of y'all. All praises
Amen.
Due to Allah.
God
love the family. God bless.
Yes, ma'am. And thank you, Sister Michelle, for bringing
on these guests. Thank you. Yes, ma'am. Yes, Dr. Rose. Yes, thank you, sister.
Yes.
Michelle.
Wa alaikum
salam.